Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, April 23rd, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Studio 7 is going out to Zimbabwe on 909 medium wave and on 4930, 5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com. Text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A former finance minister Tendai Biti warns Zimbabwe is entering a period of sustained economic recession, with ZANU-PF failing to find a quick solution.
The economy is in a structural comatose. We are entering a period of sustained recession on the back of the deflation that is already there, or the stagnation. Stagnation and deflation are the opposite of hyperinflation.
Farmers unhappy with the 2014-2015 maize producer price of $390 a ton announced yesterday by Agriculture Minister Joseph Made.
The $390 that was announced obviously falls far short the expectations of the farmers. And the major reason the farmers have come up with the $420 a ton is the input regime cost.
And police in Bulawayo summon Radio Dialogue boss for questioning after searching the community radio station's offices yesterday for equipment and documents allegedly capable of disseminating information they say is harmful to the interests of the state.
Former Finance Minister Tendai Biti has warned that Zimbabwe is entering a period of sustained economic recession as the economy is now in, quote, a structural comatose. Biti was responding to remarks yesterday by Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa that the government is ready to work on a new indigenization model that will allow some foreigners to control more than a 51% stake in companies. Zimbabwe's economy has been on a downturn for over a decade, with most people living below the poverty line and firms either downsizing or pulling down the shutters. Zimbabwe has for the past 2 months recorded deflation in what analysts deem a further dangerous sign for the struggling economy.
Economists say the indigenization law and policy inconsistencies have resulted in Zimbabwe failing to attract the much-needed foreign investment. Chinamasa, however, said the government will, while easing the indigenization law, will not amend the policy but allow for flexibility in certain sectors. Indigenization Minister Francis Nema is expected to shortly table before cabinet plans to define thresholds and timelines for foreign-owned companies to comply with the empowerment law. Chinamasa indicated that government will for now allow foreigners to keep a majority stakes in banks as locals have no capital to buy the shares. BT tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the economy might take more than a decade to fix.
The economy is in a structural comatose. We are entering a period of sustained recession on the back of the deflation that is already there, or the stagnation. Stagnation and deflation are the opposite of hyperinflation. Under a period of deflation, there is no movement in the economy. There is no aggregate demand. So people can open shops, but no one gets in. No one has got money to spend. And the unfortunate thing is that these, what a top economist called contractive, these contractive or Kuznets cycles can last you between 15 to 25 years. So we could actually be trapped in this cycle for at least 15 to 25 years. It has happened in places like the DRC Congo, places like Angola, places like Congo Brazzaville, and sometime in the history of this country, it has also happened. So that's the biggest threat which we have, which is the fear of a sustained period of recession, which African economies, and in particular the Zimbabwean economy, is prone to.
Do you think the current government has answers to all those problems that you have highlighted?
Regrettably, ZANU has no clues. ZANU has no desire ZANU has no love to pull this economy out of the quagmire. It's an old and tired party with a captain who is 90 years old. So, you know, that's a huge number. With the relevant minister, basically a peasant farmer from somewhere in Chendambuya there. So they are way out of link. So not only do they lack the craft competence, but they also lack the genuine desire of seeing genuine solutions being implemented in Zimbabwe.
Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa is signaling a step back over black empowerment. Would this help?
Look, we've always been saying that whilst the empowerment of the people is correct and it's a noble project, no one can deny that the majority of people in a country should be empowered. The predatory manner in which ZANU-PF is going about it, the elitist manner in which ZANU-PF is going about it, the thuggish manner in which ZANU-PF is going about it is not sustainable. So what needs to be done is not the selective and eclectic manner in which Patrick Chinamasa is proposing. What needs to be done at the present moment is to simply repeal the Indigenization and Empowerment Act, and then amend the Zimbabwe Investment Authority Act so that you can encourage investment, but also encourage the foreign investor to take into account the need to also look after the local population and local empowerment, which can be done in so many ways, technology transfer, community development, education, and local procurement. Can you imagine if Zimplats were to procure 100% of its raw materials in Zimbabwe? That's serious empowerment.
That was former Finance Minister Tendai Biti speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Still with the economy, United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton today said it is important for everyone who cares about Zimbabwe and its future to work hard to get the country's economy back on track. Speaking at the ongoing business conference at the Zimbabwe International Trade Fair in Bulawayo, the ambassador said the essential basis for a growing economy is confidence. And I'll quote what he said. He said that confidence is that confidence that government policies will be predictable and implemented consistently. Confidence that private property and intellectual property will be protected, confidence that courts will treat all people fairly in accordance with the law. Without confidence in these and other basic governance processes, domestic and foreign businesses are reluctant to invest, close quote. Mr. Wharton said while politicians are working out policy details, businesses and citizens need to get moving, adding many people in Zimbabwe pick four main sectors, agriculture, mining, tourism and manufacturing as elements of economic revival in Zimbabwe.
But he said, besides these traditional sources, information, communications and technology, ICT has the potential to make Zimbabwe great. Africa, Wharton said, has the greatest ICT growth potential of any continent, and Zimbabwe is far and away the nation in Africa best able to lead and profit from that growth. No other nation in Africa has the same powerful combination of intellectual capital, infrastructure, and language capability that Zimbabwe has, the ambassador said.
Mr. Wharton believes Zimbabwe has the potential to be a global player in ICT as well as being a regional leader.
And while Zimbabwe's traditional industries have a lot of international competition these days, I believe that your unique combination of intellectual capital, infrastructure, and language capability make you unbeatable in the ICT economy. And frankly, I see a number of ways in which ICT can strengthen existing economic activities, whether agriculture, mining, tourism, or manufacturing. Or how about a Zimbabwe-based online tour operator network who can customize travel for tourists of all different economic levels and interests around the world? Many more opportunities, I'm sure, will occur to all of you. So what do I think is required to see this industry take off in Zimbabwe? There's several useful lessons from other experiences around the continent. First, deployment of ICTs and the development of applications must be rooted in the realities of local circumstance and diversity. Second, governments have a crucial role to play in creating the enabling environment in which innovations and investments can flourish, and governments can serve as the lead client in adopting new innovations and technologies. Finally, most innovative ICT applications in Africa have been the result of pilot programs. So those are some tips learned from other parts of the world. Now, when my staff and I speak to young entrepreneurs in Zimbabwe, their number one concern is how to access capital. Let me tell you that clear, transparent, predictable policies will enable Zimbabwe to attract the kind of investors and partners that these young Zimbabwean entrepreneurs need to launch their businesses.
That was United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe, Bruce Watson, at the trade fair in Bulawayo.
Zimbabwe Farmers Union Executive Director Paul Zakaria says farmers are not happy with the 2014-2015 maize producer price of $390 a ton announced yesterday by Agriculture Minister Joseph Made following a cabinet approval. Zakaria says farmers' unions met last week and agreed that the producer price should range between $400 and $420 a ton to cover expenses. But the government says it settled for $390 after considering the current price of millimill. Last season, many farmers avoided the sole government-approved buyer, the Grain Marketing Board, and sold on the black market where their produce fetched more than the gazetted $385. Zimbabwe is importing maize from Zambia and South Africa to make up for shortages. Zakaria tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri that the new price does not give maize farmers the edge to continue producing the same crop.
The 390 that was announced obviously falls far short the expectations of the farmers. And the major reason that the farmers have come up with to come up the $420 per ton is the input regime cost. Our input costs are very, very high at the moment when we compare ourselves with countries elsewhere in the region. So you will see that with those implications, such a producer price falls far short of the expectations of farmers.
Are we going to see farmers boycotting this price by holding on to their crop?
Well, I don't think farmers will boycott as such. This is just a floor price that was announced. Farmers will obviously play the game in such a way that they also offload their produce to those who offer better prices than what has been announced. So the 390 could be what government is looking at, probably the price at which GMB is going to buy. But other markets could offer better prices, and that could also make the decisions of farmers to move from just GMB to other markets.
Do you see these prices driving farmers to growing maize?
Well, this is where the whole issue comes to a head. You will see that if you want to encourage farmers to produce maize, then you should put the incentives in place.
That was Zimbabwe Farmers Union Executive Director Paul Zakaria in Harare with Studio 7 reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
Afrobarometer says most Africans embrace various forms of democracy, even though the majority of political leaders on the continent are failing to deliver. In a report released today following a survey conducted between 2011 and 2013 in 34 African nations with almost 52,000 respondents, Afrobarometer says countries like Zimbabwe, Cameroon, Uganda, Cote d'Ivoire and Nigeria continue to experience a deficit of democracy. The report titled Demand for Democracy Rising in Africa reveals that in these five countries, most people clearly understand the concept of democracy, but popular demand for it greatly exceeds the amount of democracy that political elites are willing or able to supply.
It says fewer than 43% of the people consider their countries a democracy, and at the same time they are satisfied with the way democracy works. The report further indicates that countries in East Africa are more democratic than those in other parts of the continent. It says generally 7 out of 10 people in Africa prefer democracy to other political regimes. Reacting to the report, a political analyst Nkululeko Simanda of Huddersfield University tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube most aspects of Afrobarometer survey are a true reflection of democracy and other political processes in Africa.
I think, fortunately, I've just returned from a trip in mainland Europe where I've been talking to political leaders about the need for transformation in Africa. And I think that that doesn't surprise me at all, because one of the main subjects that we're discussing is that actually African states that were inherited from the colonial period are unable or are incapable of promoting any democratic leadership. That leadership eventually has to become undemocratic in order for the African state in its current state to be, in its current formation, to be sustained or to sustain its position. So it's, these are what we call structural issues. Structurally, the African state cannot survive on the basis of democracy. It is anti-democracy. The government and how it is organized cannot be democratic for too long. The leader ends up finding themselves in a corner and backed up to promote corruption and abuse of power.
But do you see any transformation in terms of democratic principles in various countries within the next few years?
I think that if the current movement globally that is seeking to entrench democracy and completely transform the nature of the African state, move it away from the very centralized pre-colonial governance structure. I think if that is put into place, things may change.
That was political analyst Nkululeko Sibanda of Huddersfield University speaking with Studio 7.
But ZANU-PF Central Committee member Godfrey Malaba disagrees, saying Afrobarometer has a hidden agenda, especially when indications that Zimbabwe's leaders do not want to create a democratic state.
What is happening is that since independence, we've been holding elections after elections, and that's the measurement of democracy. We have not had a government that has come in any other way but elections, and to me, that is democracy. Our people have that right, have that authority to exercise their voting rights, and they are voting and choosing leaders of their choice. So when Afrobarometer is saying Zimbabwe has no democracy, really, they really need to come out clean and explain why. I don't think they are being fair to us, because smarting from a situation where people were not allowed to vote and all of a sudden they are exercising their rights, they are choosing leaders of their choices, and then you have people calling themselves whatever organization they call themselves, telling you that what you have just done is not democracy.
Mr. Malaba, are you actually dismissing this report?
Completely nonsensical, because what is done in Zimbabwe and done in Britain or done in any other Western country or any other Asiatic country surely should be described in the same manner. Why would elections done in the same way be surely described in different ways? All SADC countries have elections premised on the SADC guidelines, and that includes Zimbabwe.
That was the ZANU-PF Central Committee member Godfrey Malaba speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Bulawayo. Afrobarometer is a non-governmental organization that measures the social, political, and economic environment in Africa. Some of the limitations of the current survey included civil strife and difficulties in accessing respondents in some of the surveyed nations.
Police in Bulawayo today summoned Radio Dialogue production manager Zenzele Ndebele for questioning after searching the community station's offices yesterday for equipment allegedly capable of disseminating information harmful to the interest of the state. Ndebele was acquitted last month on charges of contravening broadcasting laws after police seized 180 radio sets during a similar raid, tells reporter Sithandekile Mhlanga. Police today indicated they had information the community radio station was trying to sabotage the ongoing Zimbabwe International Trade Fair.
Yesterday around midday, 10 or so gentlemen came saying that they given a search warrant, or they had a search warrant which was in my name, claiming that somewhere either at my business premises or at my residential address there was broadcasting equipment and documents. So they searched the radio dialog offices. They could not find anything. They went up to our studio and they searched. They could not find anything. They went to my house, searched every room, including the toilet. They could not find anything, and they left. And today, at around 8:05, I got a phone call saying that I should report to Law and Order in Central Police. I met the officer in charge, Law and Order, together with some guys from Peace and the CIO. And basically, they say that they had information that Radio Dialog working with other organizations like NIDT in a negative way. I told them there is no way we will support this trade fair because trade fair is good business for the people of Lawa. The same companies that are closing in Lawa are likely to get hope from the trade fair. So after the talks or the conversation, I left. So far, there are no charges that are preferred against either me or Radio Dialog.
Why do you think the police would just target your organization?
Maybe it's the nature of work that we do. They feel like we are doing things that clash with their interests. Or
such as?
We cover issues that affect the social and political issues that affect the people of Lawa and the surrounding areas. Maybe it might be because they are not interested in some of the topics that we are covering.
That was Zenzele Ndebele, Radio Dialog production manager, on the line from Bulawayo. Studio 7's efforts to get a comment from the police on this matter were fruitless. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 medium wave and on the 4930 5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies. The late MDC founding member Frankie Dungwa, who died in Harare Monday, was buried at the Warren Hill Cemetery today. MDC Deputy National Chairperson Morgan Komichi described the late Dungwa, popularly known as Mdara Mtambu, as a fearless leader who did not concern himself with positions but wanted to see real change and a new Zimbabwe. He said the 83-year-old was passionate about his party and truly believed unto his death that the MDC would change the face of Zimbabwe. Komichi urged members of the MDC to remain united and hopeful, even under the current liquidity crunch that is currently affecting the country. Fred Dungwa was born in Chiwota, Ninguo village, on 12 August 1931. He is survived by his wife Constance Mufuka Dungwa and 8 children.
Zimbabwe is one of the three countries selected by the International Diabetes Federation to set up preventive foot care centers at Harare and Barire Nyatwa hospitals to cater for diabetic patients. Zimbabwe Diabetic Association Chief Ngonichi Gwana says his organization is partnering with the Health Ministry, University of Zimbabwe, and the International Diabetes Federation to set up the foot care centers, which are expected to be launched next month. The project is under the International Diabetes Federation. Diabetes is one of the world's silent killers, and according to Chigwada, 10% of the country's population is affected by the disease.
We applied to the International Diabetes Federation Bridges Research Net to do food screening, diabetes food screening project in Zimbabwe. Out of the 66 countries that applied for that project, three countries were chosen: China, UKEDO, and Zimbabwe. So already the International Diabetes Federation officials have been to Zimbabwe. We conducted a two-day workshop where we trained 75 nurses and doctors together on how to deal with diabetes food screening problems. And the pilot project is going to start first at Parenyato and Harare hospitals, and then later on it will cascade to all the provinces of Zimbabwe. We are working together with the Minister of Health and Child Care in cooperation with the International Diabetes Federation Bridges Research Net, which is an international grant provided by Lilly Insulin Company. So this is the project that we are initiating, that a diabetic clinic is not enough when eye screening is not done, when food screening is not done. So this is what we are trying to achieve for our people with diabetes in Zimbabwe.
When are you hoping to launch these clinics?
We are hoping to launch the clinics in May 2014, when the Medical Research Council has approved ethical approval. That's what we are just waiting for. Letter of understanding, the MOU has been agreed. But we are now just waiting with the Medical Research Council to look at our consent forms and approve what we've agreed on. So hopefully by May, project is going to start at these two major hospitals, which are referral hospitals, Parenyato Hospital and Harare Central Hospital. And then in December, going onwards, we will now go to Mpilo, Mtare General Hospital, we cascade now to all these other provinces.
What is the importance of having such a clinic at a hospital, especially for diabetic patients?
What we are trying to do here is trying to avoid leg amputations caused by poor management of diabetes. So we are empowering our people with diabetes, good glycemic control. We are even empowering our healthcare professionals to inspect our people with diabetes when they come to their clinic. And if there is any abnormality, refer to the specialist doctors who deal in fit. This is what we are trying to achieve at the end of the day.
What percentage of the population actually has diabetes?
The last survey that was done by the Minister of Health and Child Care was in 2005, which indicated that 10% of the population of 13 million people had diabetes at that time. But we are now trying to look for funding to get the actual prevalence as at 2014, because we now suspect it is more than the 10%, although we don't have the actual figures. But very soon we are going to do a survey on the actual prevalence of diabetes in Zimbabwe. We have applied to so many organizations to do that survey. So hopefully this will help us to convince policymakers how serious this diabetes condition is.
That was Chief Executive Officer Ngoni Chigwana of the Zimbabwe Diabetic Association speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyawiye from Harare. Listen in tomorrow when Mr. Chigwana will speak about diabetes management and treatment.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington. Did you know you can listen to web audio replays of our programs on our website and sign up for newsletters in English, Shona and Ndebele?
Visit our site at www.studio7news.com. You can also give us feedback by text message. Our number is 1-202-465-0318.
Most civil servant bosses are unhappy that the implementation of their long-awaited pay rise has left the majority of their subordinates now earning more than them. So while the juniors are celebrating, the bosses are livid. The government and civil servants in January agreed to adjust salaries that had not changed for a long time. A raft of changes were agreed on, including effecting a performance-based salary as well as debunching the salaries according to experience and qualifications.
However, Apex Council Chairman Richard Gundane said the agreements were not being effected properly, resulting in discrepancies. This has infuriated trade unions, which say some government workers are still earning well below the poverty datum line. Zimbabwe Teachers Association Chief Executive Officer Sifiso Ndlovu tells Studio 7 the salaries issue will be discussed by the National Joint Council.
Yes, there is an element of what we agreed, but not what we asked for. Because at the time of negotiation, we did agree on the entry levels of salary. And the assumption was that the entry levels will mark the beginning of an across-the-board increase, which did not turn out to be an across-the-board increase in terms of cascading the increase. What we were expecting was that the lowest grade would end at 7%, a And then that 37% would have a resultant and a cumulative effect of paying higher salaries to the